This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
It's crypto summer, which means it's festival season. At Real Vision, we're getting ready for the next Festival of Learning in partnership with Kraken. It's taking place April 18 and 19, and the theme is Don't F Up Alts, Memes, and NFTs. Yep, there's a big world of digital assets beyond Bitcoin and ETH with lots of opportunity and lots of risk. We'll be bringing a ton of timely and actionable knowledge from speakers including Raul Powell, Sergio Silva, Kevin Kelly, OSF, and more. It's completely free to attend. Just go to realvision.com/festivalofLearning to get the details and save your seat. We'll see you there. Is the U.S. dollar still a safe haven? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With me today is Greg Weldon, CEO of Weldon Financial and a partner in our marketplace. Hi, Greg. It's great to have you back on.
Oh, thanks. Anytime. Good to see you.
So I'm excited to chat with you today because there's so much going on right now in global markets. And you look across every asset class in every country and give both the big picture fundamentals as well as a lot of granular trading levels and strategy. So there's a lot to dig in on here. Let's start first with U.S. stocks because we know they're in so many people's portfolios. They're down again today, fourth day in a row for the S&P 500. Does it feel like there's more to go on the downside?
Yeah, I mean, to me it does. And I think you can really hone it down to something. We did a piece, I think it was last Friday, you know, KISS, K-I-S-S, keep it simple, stupid. It's that simple. When the dollar goes up, stocks tend to go down. When the dollar goes down, stocks tend to go up. And right now the dollar is breaking out. It's breaking out against a broad amount of currencies and at the same time declining against gold. So to get back to your top of the hour question about is it a safe haven, I think it's, you know, bearing out not to be, but in the context of how it affects stocks is quite negative. And you see this globally too, because it affects different places of the world differently depending on what the currency is. Is it an exporting or importing country? So when you look at something like the U.S., what you don't have in the stock market right now is a strong consumer. You can talk about the consumer being strong, and a lot of people do, and that just kind of blows my mind because the statistics don't bear that out at all. When you look at the most recent retail sales number, for example, the increase, it's not price-adjusted numbers, number one. So the increase, 85% of the year-over-year growth was because of inflation. So when you take that into account, you see the growth is much lower. It's the same with earnings. We destroyed the labor market report in terms of the household survey, where people are losing their jobs, people are dropping out of the labor force again, where you see, you know, wages are hovering around 4, but inflation's hovering around 4. So you're not, you know, you're not making any more money specifically in terms of your wage gains. Savings are depleted. Credit card debt's through the roof, and now, you know, banks are going to be tightening on auto loans and credit card loans, according to the senior loan officer survey, through the end of the year. So relying on the consumer doesn't work, especially when the XRT, the retail ETF, and the XLY, the consumer discretionary ETF, are breaking down relative to the market. And that is really key, because that ratio tends to be a leader. When you see the consumer break versus the overall market, that's a bad sign. So then you are left with two other things. It's been the consumer, it's been AI and high tech. And when you look at NVIDIA, you get NVIDIA below 830, and it's kind of like it has so much space just to have a normal correction. I would think anyone that wants to own this stock owns it already. And I see the whole kind of market in that vein of, and I wrote a piece today, and we called it the liquidity, liquidation virus, where you have so many stocks where the volume is kind of dried up because the stock prices are so high, the on-balance volume and any measure of ownership is through the roof. And if you have just want to take some money off the table, first quarter gains are massive, you know, and all of a sudden it's like there's no volume on the buy side. And that could be a real kind of trap door here for the market as well. And then you start talking about the Fed, and you went from, okay, 6 or 7 rate cuts to now. Maybe they'll cut once, not even really twice is even fully priced right now. So I think the pendulum swung too far on the east side, and it's kind of swung too far the other way. But then it depends on inflation, because we do see the economy kind of starting to crack, even though people, it's not generally aware. It's not in the headlines. It's not at the top line data yet, but it's under the surface for sure. And when you start to see that, and the dollar's rallying because the Fed is tight here, if inflation comes back, which I think it is, all right, and we said this on the show the last time, you were going to hit a low. And we've seen that everywhere around the world and various things from the monthly numbers now picking up, for example, all kinds of different little tells within the data. So I think that that's kind of a problem for the Fed. And if all of a sudden people start to become aware that the consumer's not as strong and the market's not as strong and the leadership's not there anymore and the housing market's, you know, really gone down here too, and home builders led, now they're kind of cracking as well. You have a lot of downside room for correction, and the dollar would be a major catalyst for this kind of to just cascade a little bit to the downside.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the fact that you're talking about things being weak is kind of a contrarian call right now, where if you look at where we came in at the beginning of the year, you know, it's not the case. So you're right. It's been, and this is, by the way, what happened last year too, right? It's been a fast move as people pivot. And now I think I saw March 2025 is when the market or some in the market put the first easing is going to come. So you could
see you're looking at 4.5 by the end of next year. That's, you know, 3 to 4 rate cuts, depending on where you want.
So you're saying that narrative could carry, even though the support is crumbling underneath and cause a stock market correction, because you've got the fundamentals caving and then you've got higher interest rates, potentially higher inflation causing trouble as well, if I'm hearing you correctly. Is that right?
Well, we asked this question the last time we talked, and it was kind of like, you know, the Fed kind of keeps pushing. And, you know, even when you get some signs of life that maybe inflation is coming down, which of course it was going to anyway, it was a mathematical certainty just from the energy base effect. Mm. Now that's starting to reverse. That's one of many things now that suggests that inflation is going to be bottoming here. And that is hand in hand with the things I've been saying now for the past really 18 months, that it's a 40-year downtrend in interest rates and in inflation that has turned. And now you're going to have higher lows, and this is going to be the way it is. And you're in the higher low period right now. And if that kind of handcuffs the Fed, then it really becomes, especially in an election year, not that this is going to happen that quickly, but the question then becomes, at what point do they acquiesce to higher inflation, and do they change the narrative from fighting inflation to protecting the economy? And that's the key question. And I don't know what the answer to that question is. Nobody does. And I will tell you this, Powell has been spot on in telling us what he's going to do and then doing it. He hasn't led us on in any real way. This has been the market's call. And what's interesting is for that 40-year period, the market was always right. Whenever the Fed was hawkish and the market was dovish, it turned out to be a dovish result because it was always lower lows. Now we're starting to see the reverse of this, and people aren't used to that. And you drive these rates down thinking the market can kind of lead the Fed lower, and it didn't happen. And it's probably not ready to happen yet. And we'll see what happens with inflation, because if that scares people about the Fed and that drives the dollar through 107.5, stock market will be in a different position, no doubt about it, in my mind.
Hey, everyone, we're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Getting a handle on crypto as an investor has never been more crucial. From the maturation of the market, institutional adoption, and evolving regulation to the Bitcoin halving event, this year is set to be a thrilling one for digital assets. But it's still the Wild West, with rugs, scams, and some shady players out there. There's a ton of opportunity, but a lot of vulnerability too. Real Vision can help you sift through the noise and provide you with a safe space to learn from the real experts in digital assets. Today, we're giving you access to a free Real Vision membership and access to a phenomenal video with Real Vision CEO and co-founder Raul Pell and Julian Biddle, head of macro research at Global Macro Investor. They dig into why macro is king, why crypto is macro, and how to think about your investment framework this year. To get free access, visit realvision.com/crypto is macro. That's realvision.com/crypto is macro.
Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. Now the good news. There's a better alternative. Monarch Money. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and saying they're loving it. Have you been frustrated with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads, difficult to use, or rarely updated? So was Monarch. They built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive and powerful and ad-free and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all your finances. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial.
Yeah. So before we get to the dollar, and there's so much important stuff to unpack there, what levels are you looking at for S&P 500? What would make you nervous that this sort of, air pocket could really get some momentum to the downside?
Well, I think you have some momentum to the downside right now, kind of on a medium-term basis. So in the S&P, I mean, all kinds of different things come in around 4,600. So I think it's probably some kind of fast and furious shakeout down to 4,600, and then we reassess and see what the reaction is and see what the vibe kind of is at if we get that low and it happens quickly. I think the NASDAQ is at greater risk. And when you do, even some of the angles, and I mean, if you look at like a chart of NVIDIA against the NASDAQ as a ratio spread, it goes like this. It's straight up and down and to a length that seems insane to me. And the point really is that you would have a normal correction here that's going to seem more dramatic because of how much money it represents now that prices are so high in everything. So I think there's a lot to be said, for that too, but we'll see. And I mean, let alone what you could have in terms of political risk just here in the US, in terms of social unrest in the US because of this divided country and a political situation that's going to be a circus for sure. And, let alone the geopolitical risk, on the other side of the world. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's what, it is a very, very difficult macro environment we're in. We took a close look at geopolitics on Monday because of everything that happened transpired over the weekend. And one of our guests, Marco Papich, said that it's the U.S. election that's the biggest risk. And he called it a macro black hole because of all of the, and I thought that was brilliant. Yeah. And very telling as to where we are. So let's talk about the U.S. dollar. And we've got some questions coming in. They're awesome. Keep them coming on the chat on the platform and I'll get to them. But let's talk about the U.S. dollar. And this is super important because, Greg, you do so much great work here. It has been rising as people have been switching this and sniffing out this Fed that may be higher for longer. You think there's a risk the dollar could strengthen from here. What would be the catalyst for that? And what are you looking at in terms of upside targets?
Well, I mean, 107.35 is really the key level, and it has such long-term implications. This is a really critical juncture when you look at the history going back to the 70s on the dollar, frankly, because if you get through this 107.35 level, you're looking at 114, and that above that, it's like the upside is going to be huge, technically speaking. You have so much room to move, and it would be some kind of blow-up scenario. When you talk about a black hole, I mean, I talk about the debt black hole all the time. Mm-hmm. And have we have crossed the macro event horizon. And now, when you cross over the event horizon, you can't get out. You don't know you're in the black hole, but you can't get out. $307 trillion was the latest number from the IIF on global debt. So when you talk about the dollar and how it affects all the currencies against which it's rising and their debt and their economies and their inflation, you take a country like Japan and all of a sudden, crude oil has come off a little bit here in the U.S. It's breaking out in yen terms because the yen is so weak. So think about what that means for the BOJ and the inflation in Japan. There's so many moving pieces here. And it's just interesting because, you know, at the end of the day, to some degree, it does come back to the Fed. So the dollar black hole links back to the debt. And I think that that is where, and we've been kind of reviving a theme that I actually used in my book that I wrote like in, you know, 1920. That was the dollar ultimately looks like the emperor with no clothes. You know, he's exposed. I mean, we have debt. We're talking about, you know, we public borrowing is through the roof. All right, it's going to be trillions of dollars this year. But not only that, it's the means of financing the debt, which is borrowing from the public, which is more right now than the public debt has been in the first 5 months of the fiscal year. I mean, that is pure insanity. In February, they spent twice as much money as they took in revenue, twice as much. So when you look at that, and the world sees this, and they see kind of the weakness in terms of our dealings with other countries on a political, you know, global stage, that takes away from the clothing that the dollar's been wearing, this armor. It doesn't have the armor on anymore. I actually like that even better. I mean, the armor's been stripped from the dollar here.
So, square this for everybody, though, because I think these are two about time frame. Because longer term, there's this problem with debt and the dollar. But shorter term, it's strengthening, and it may continue to do so based on those interest rate differentials, right?
Right. And it could precipitate what you're saying. So it is, because ultimately the dollar has to go a lot lower, and it will. I mean, this is kind of the situation of the leading edge towards becoming, you know, an emerging market currency for all intents and purposes. The fundamentals would support that thought process, and a lot of smart people out there know. I mean, this is something that's been talked about for a while.
The debasement of currency. The other issue, though, is everybody's got a lot of debt, right? I mean, the whole world has the same problem to a certain extent.
Well, that gets back to another theme, again, from the book that I wrote years ago. I mean, it is, we used to call it the competitive currency devaluation speedway. And it is like, you know, at one point, you know, you kind of had the currencies were all lined up. Say it's like a NASCAR race and the currencies are lined up behind a pace car and you're driving around, you know, and this was the gold standard, right? And you had the pace car and nobody really moved out of place. You took the pace car off, you took gold out of the equation. All of a sudden, these cars are all racing at top speed to, you know, to outlap one another when it comes to currency depreciation. And I think we're entering that phase. And I think gold is telling us that, because gold is rallying against every paper currency on the planet right now. And that is the biggest tell of all. When the dollar is rallying on this kind of interest rate dynamic, when it's rallying on the geopolitical risk, when it, you know, all of these things, and you see gold rallying anyway, and the gold adjusted value of the dollar just hit a 13-year low. So from that perspective, that's screaming to us that, you know, people aren't really now going to gold in the way that a lot of people have always said they would, and were pissed off that they didn't, and all this kind of thing. And a lot of people are not on board this move. This move has largely been Chinese buying, in large part. The open interest on the futures market has been low. People were liquidating ETFs. All the bullion centers had lower imports for the last, you know, 6 to 8 months. So when you see that, this is the kind of move where the U.S. investors and the ETF guys are going to be chasing this market higher at some point. We said that couple of months ago. Now you're in that phase two, and that is speaking volumes towards the dollar. So yeah, it is. It's bifurcated and polarized like everything else is. Yeah. So I think higher, and then, man, it could get really nasty.
And then crazy. So I want to sort of circle up on the short term, because this idea of the pressure, you know, we know the theory of the dollar wrecking ball, but the pressure that it's putting on so many currencies, especially in the Asia region, and you really detail this in your global macro strategy note. So talk to us a little bit about, are we going to see devaluations? I mean, we know there's been pressure on the yen. We know there's been pressure on the yuan. So let's start with those two. What are we expecting there? What happens from here with those currencies?
It's a good question. And I mean, you really hit on the head. It makes me think, because I was just thinking this myself earlier this morning, actually, that what it comes down to is not even really that. And it's kind of like, I wrote, when I was writing a piece this morning, I said, oh no, Mr. Bill, and some of these currencies, and the dollar is Mr. Hand. He's about to come down and squash, you know, a little claymation figure. But when you think about it, the key really to this is intervention. Will they intervene? Will they take some of their dollars and put them back in the market? And I could see a situation where this is, and I wrote this today, that this is very similar, not in the rise in the dollar even close yet. It's not really up that much over certain time frames, okay? Mm. It's just now breaking out technically and could become a problem if it gets higher. But it feels very much like 1985 before the Plaza Accord. And mm-hmm. I remember that like it was yesterday, getting on the train that morning to go downtown Manhattan in the World Trade Center and hearing that they had signed this accord to devalue the dollar, and it was down something like 56% over the next 3 years. And it was huge and it was necessary. And I think, the problem is to get to that point, you'll have a lot of pain in the meantime. And then the reverse of that will be exciting in some ways. Stocks will soar. So
wait, are you talking about a decision to devalue the dollar, or could the devaluation come from Japan deciding to devalue the yen? China?
Either way, and I think ultimately it could be, look at this one of two ways or both ways, because yes, it absolutely could be these currencies get devalued. We've seen plenty of cases just in the last 18 months. I could list countries that have devalued their currencies: Vietnam, Pakistan, Turkey, Angola. I mean, the list is long. All right. And when you take that the other way, when it gets to a point where you are talking the yen or, some the sterling or Canadian dollar, Aussie dollar, that's when you start to see where could the tables turn here, that it becomes an issue for the dollar and the Fed and the Treasury to manage this, because you're hurting these other countries so much. Think about this, too. If you have a geopolitical event in the Middle East, which I don't understand the complacency around this to begin with. I mean, I won't even talk about it right now. We just get off track. But whatever might happen there, if you do see, Brent crude get through 95, it's going to 125. And if that happens, think about the currencies being devalued. How much energy is going to cost in those countries? Mm. Inflation will be through the roof. Mm. So there's a lot of tentacles here that need to be managed.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So a couple of comments on that. One of the things I really love about reading your reports is that there are always these nuggets and information that's missing from my radar. And this is a perfect example. I went through all the charts of what's happening with the Asian currencies, and it's just not stuff you see, because we know people talk about the yen. We're talking about Malaysia, Indonesia, Korea, everything that's happening. And it's just... the kind of stuff that we need to be aware of. There's deep history in what happens when you start to see this kind of pressure on currencies. So super appreciative of that. And I know that there's some chatter in the chat that I'm watching. If you want more, or you want to see some of Greg's work, for all you RV members, there's a really easy link to access his reports in the marketplace on the RV platform, and you get a special rate. So go check that out. Really, really fantastic stuff. And the other thing I'll mention, Greg, is that I just sat down and did My Life in Four Trades with Dan Tapiero, who worked with everybody, right? All of the big macro whales that we read about in books, Stan Druckenmiller, you name it. He worked at Tiger, and he was involved in trades when both the ERM busted and the Asian currency crisis. It was a global crisis when these things happen. And we're not saying there's going to be one, but if you're sitting here thinking, I own NVIDIA, what do I care about Asian currencies? It's so interconnected. And I know this is why you watch it. If these things happen in a disorderly way, there are massive tentacles through the global economy on this. So it's a really important, and not a lot of people are across this kind of currency action, but it's super important. And it seems like things are, it's a very risky time right now.
I would add one too, by the way, is Korea, because the yuan is usually a very stable currency, and it is kind of coming unglued, particularly against gold. And when you start to see under the cover of what's going on in the Middle East, Iran, wink, wink, from China, all of a sudden China is in North Korea, and now they got a new strategic pact. I mean, if you really look at China and the South China Sea, you see Korea, you see some of the southern islands in Japan. There is really bad blood, clearly, between Japan and China. They talk about it all the time. These islands are right there, man. You want to go up into the main shipping ports in China, you got to go right through this area. That's why the Philippines, Vietnam, and all these countries are at risk. And these are the currencies that are all of a sudden the weakest you know, at the same time that the China is really kind of trying to manage their currency. There's a other, another whole overlay here that is China. And what are they doing? And what are they trying to achieve with what they're doing? And we could talk about that for a half hour alone.
Yeah, I know. We keep not running out of time to talk about China. But don't worry, guys. We will, because there's just so much stuff to go over here. So Ralph asking, what's your view on base metals? I'm going to get some of these questions in. I want to get back to some of the gold targets, because you've been a longtime gold watcher. But what about base metals?
I like them. And, you know, we liked them before they just started to break out too on this Russian news. So that's a nice little event catalyst. But you have low inventories, especially of copper. You have, you know, a situation where the swaps have been in contango and deep contango that really doesn't make sense relative to the supply. And if you want to say, well, you know, Shanghai supplies are up, they are certainly of nickel, but that's not like supply that's necessarily coming out of China. I mean, these are strategically held supplies that are probably not coming back into the market, stuff like wheat and, you know, all the base metals. So in that context, when you see now all of a sudden some push in the swap rates, number one, I think is really important. And you see some breakouts, and not only that, but the equities too in the mining shares. The base mining shares have been on fire before the move in copper. Now you've added aluminum to the list. Zinc was actually just came up the back end just before the Russian news. And nickel now breaking out, which had bottomed at 16,000 and kind of started moving sideways, building a base. So I think fundamentally, my favorite pick is copper because it has strength. But then you get the housing numbers in the U.S. and it's, you know, it's up 7 cents, it's down 4 cents. And it's like everything's so polarized, and you get good news and you get bad news. And it's literally, I say this all the time, there's something for everyone in the news. Whatever your case is, you can find evidence to support almost any case these days in the news.
That's why it's such a hard macro environment, you know, even for folks like you've been doing it for so long. Just want to circle back on this, because Zoran is asking, what's your view on gold and the U.S. dollar correlation decoupling? We touched on it earlier, but
I would just add too, in base metals, long-term bullish, and I think, you know, the risk is an economic downturn, and that would be negative. Of course, that's the risk. I would say, I mean, the divergence has been happening for a while, really. It goes back to, I guess, kind of like 2015 is when it really started, but, you know, certainly in the pandemic it, you know, became very acute. So in that context, I think that that's telling in the sense of all the things we've talked about, that the dollar is kind of, you know, exposed here. And, you know, I you know, when I do public speeches, sometimes I like to use visuals for people. And especially if you're talking to a kind of a retail crowd, I mean, it's like, look, you know, it's the Wizard of Oz theme. All right. You know, everyone thinks central banks can be these, you know, it's like the great and powerful Oz, and they speak and, oh my God, the market's moving. They do whatever they want. And they're master puppeteers is what they really are. At the end of the day, it's just some guy behind the curtain pulling the levers, printing money. So in that context, that's why I think this divergence has taken place. There's a lot of talk out there that gold should be lower too, because real yields are higher. And I would say the same thing. Real yields are higher because bonds are a problem. Supply is a problem. Demand's going to be a problem. The Fed's going to have to come back and more QE. They know it. They're going to have to print more money and more QE. That's the story in gold right there. And what Maggie said before is right on. Globally. So imagine that. And that's why, you know, I've always followed gold, but I'm not a gold bug, and I've been bearish gold, and I've been made money on the short side of gold. So, you know, I call it as I see it, and I have no bias, or at least I try not to. And I've never been this like, holy mackerel, this thing could just spike big, and especially in silver. Now, maybe too many people want that in silver, but gold kind of has the setup for it, because people aren't as involved as they were even close to when at the 2011 peak, and look how much higher you are already.
Right. So. And by the way, that we've been having this conversation on Real Vision, and it's been contrarian. We had Rick Rule on many, many, many months ago talking about how small a portion people's, you know, of portfolios hold gold. You've been talking about that. So there, you know, that there's that backdrop that is sort of also leading when you layer on all the other issues.
And the gold crowd's been talking about that forever.
And the people ignored them because that's why they got the name gold.
Early 90s.
People thought they were just a broken record, right?
Yeah,
so
Everyone's disinvested for ETFs, and that could become a major factor. So yeah.
Yeah. So by the way, I just want to separate out if things sound sometimes contradictory throughout all of our conversations, not even the one we're having today, it's because there are short-term things that people see happening, and then long-term. So if everything's going to be quantitative easing again, and to deal with this debt, and central banks are going to print money like crazy and stuff, then that is a longer-term or sort of medium to long term effect on risk assets, including stocks, right? But you've got this other big sort of bumpy period before that would happen. Same thing with the dollar. Strengthen first and then later on. So you've got the after effects that Greg's talking about, but then but shorter term. So I'm always trying to put a time horizon.
You need a catalyst. And right now, the dollar could be the catalyst to drive the stock market down to force the Fed back into play.
Right. Want to ask you about Bitcoin when we're talking about looking for safe havens. And we got a couple questions in the chat about that, because I think that, you know, there's always this hope that it's going to be one of those alternatives or any sort of digital asset or cryptocurrency. We've seen gold taking off. We saw Bitcoin rising, but it's been moving down, it looks like, with risk assets. What are you looking at in terms of Bitcoin?
I think it's kind of polarized right now. I mean, it honestly, I feel it's almost a 50-50 right here in the short term. I think longer term, it is very much like gold. I like Bitcoin the same way I do like gold. I think there are even more potential benefits to Bitcoin on a global scale where people can't access gold. And they have a phone, they have an account, they can buy Bitcoin. So in different currencies. And so to whatever extent, and some of the evidence suggests that a lot of the times when Bitcoin has actually made the up moves has been during off US hours too. So I think that's encouraging as well. But to the extent that it could correct here, I don't know. You got all this inflow into ETFs. If the stock market gets whacked, that kind of money is stock market money that may flow out. So I worry about that a little bit. Ethereum just kind of cracked today a little bit, actually, technically speaking. I think I'd rather buy a breakout and strength above 75,000. What do I need to buy it here? If I can buy it at 75, I don't mind, because if it's going there, it's going a lot higher. So I don't have to have the entire move. That's just being kind of greedy.
I just want to pause, Greg, because that's such an important point, and it's really spoken like a trader. Whereas I think on the retail side, a lot of us sit here and think, I'm going to wait to get in, or I have to try to time the bottom. You don't mind. It's okay to buy it when it's moving up. You can wait for confirmation and then jump on, right?
Yeah. Buy strong, sell stronger. I mean, you know, they say, you know, but at the same time, I would have downside targets if it did crack 61,020 is the exact level for me, where you're probably risking 51 to 53 with an outside risk down to 45-ish. I don't think it gets that low. I just think there's too much still, you know, kind of, there'll be love for it if it does crack. You'll get kind of flush out the new weaker longs, especially if it comes in the context of stock market cracking. And then you'd be looking to pick it up because, yeah, it will be an alternative. And when the Fed does, you know, go back to pulling the levers, yeah, it should definitely benefit, you know, an outflow from, you know, dollar and all paper assets for sure.
Do you look at, do you stick with Bitcoin or do you look at other things? We know Solana was a really, there's been a lot of interest in our community in that because it did so well last year. Or are you sticking to Bitcoin for the reason of it being kind of digital gold?
That's a good question. I mean, we manage money, you know, of course, we're CTA as well. So, you know, I do anything that has a futures contract. A regulated futures contract is what we do. So Bitcoin has a futures contract. I started trading it, you know, and I think I might have mentioned this even on your show the last time too. It's funny because, you know, you go back to way back, I'm talking mid 80s when the Swedish krona and people were like, krona, what the hell is that? You know, it was so bizarre, you know, it was like, what? And so when these markets kind of first debut, they trade very almost predictably and very technically. And Bitcoin has been like that, man. It really has traded in a very tight technical analysis 101 textbook-like way. So I think that that's interesting. But Ethereum, Bitcoin is what we trade. In terms of some of the others, I don't know enough and I don't have enough time to dig deep deep as I would need to dig to put money in them. I can't really comment on the other ones. I mean, Solana, I know everyone there loves Solana.
Please
don't attack me. But my question is, how's that different from Doge?
Yeah. Well, for those who are looking for the answer, we have, I was just going to give this programming note, but it's very seriously, we get these questions all the time. We ask them, by the way, we ask them all the time too. We are doing a festival of learning on this very topic about everything in the digital asset world beyond Bitcoin and ETH. It's 18-19, so this Thursday, Friday. It is free. You just have to register. So you can head over to realvision.com/FOL to register and find out. We have a lot of great people. And Sergio Silva's coming on. Such an interesting guy. I don't know if anyone's listened to My Life in Four Trades. You should. He's amazing. He's going to be doing a three ideas about Solana. He's very, very into and active on what's happening on that protocol. So you can learn a lot. But yeah, Greg, it's super interesting. I'm laughing when you say I have no time. I'm not surprised because I looked through the like 72 charts that you sent over and they're amazing. And we were trying to figure out how do we whittle it down to 30 minutes, but we did a good job. And I think we talked about some of the things that are really pertinent. And importantly, some of the things that maybe not everyone's talking about. We know everyone's talking about the 10-year yield, but a lot of people aren't looking about the implications of the dollar, what's happening with currencies and the relation to gold and what you're seeing in gold. So we really appreciate your insights, especially since you've watched them for so long. If you can remember where you were when the Plaza Accord happened, that's the kind of insight we need. So we appreciate it.
You know, you really nailed it in the head before, because what we try and do here is give our clients something that they're not going to see somewhere else.
Yeah.
And give them some other little tweak in maybe the way they think about something. It's not like we're know-it-alls. It's like, I want to show you things in different perspectives because I've been doing this for so long that you will not see anywhere else. And that's why we have the client list that we have.
Absolutely. And you know, that comes from experience. Just frankly. And you know, we're back in that kind of time when if you didn't live through and trade through it, it feels very different. And you know, so it's really interesting, but super important. So we appreciate it, Greg. Thanks so much.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you. Fantastic chat and questions. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And remember, if you want to increase your knowledge, get on that list and join the Festival of Learning. It's going to be really great. We'll see you. Thanks, everybody. Take care and good luck out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.